Okay, we started today with chapter 4 of Yechezkel, and then we're going to do the second of four symbols. Yechezkel is acting out something and symbolically representing something about Israel. The first one is where he's tied up in ropes. Israel is about to be tied up somewhat. They will no longer be free to run around as they have. Now, that has somewhat already happened. Every moment in Sefer Yechezkel is after the first exile of 597. So the tying up of Yechezkel, a reference to what has already happened, but certainly what is yet to happen, even to a greater extent, which was 11 years later, which was the utter destruction of the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. So now the second of these visions and symbols is going to start with Perek Dalet. V'ata ben Adam. Hashem tells him to take a brick, set it down before you, and trace on it the name Yerushalayim. Write the word Yerushalayim on the brick. Okay? This is typical of Yechezkel type prophecies. V'nasata aleha matzor, v'vonisa aleha doyek. Right, and matzor is a siege, like Bein HaMitzarim. The 3 weeks we call Bein HaMitzarim. Okay, put a siege around, put a fence around that little brick. Right, okay. The brick obviously is meant to represent Yerushalayim. Uvinisa aleha doyek. Right, and a doyek is like a mound, like a small little a tail. Right. And build this mound near it. V'shafachto aleha solala. Right? And set up a solala is like set up an encampment against it. Right? Obviously, he's making some kind of little diagram of the siege on Jerusalem. The Babylonians besieged it with an encampment. V'nasata aleha machanos. Right? You make put a wall against it, make this encampment, right? It's a wall, a mound, and a siege. V'sim aleha chorim saviv. Okay, what is chorim? Chorim, the Mefarshim say, our Rashi says, sarim emunim ahatzava. Zeshim el ruach zev, zeh el ruach zeh. Chorim are officers, various captains around the city in charge of breaking in where they are. Right? Others say Karim are like battering rams. Im Shal Barzel. Okay. All right. In order to break through into the city. V'atah kach lecha machavas barzel, v'nasata usakir barzel v'incha uvein ha'ir, v'achinosa es panecha eleha v'isa b'matzor v'tzarto aleha osi l'beis Yisrael. Okay? And he tells him to take like an iron pan, or like an iron kli. A machavas is a pan, right? Mincha a machavas, we say in his mirrors. Take an iron pan and put it in the sata'us of kir barzel, right? And make it like an iron wall, this pan. A strange kind of thing. Right? Between you and the city. Hold on to this pan between you and this little siege picture that you have here. Right? And then set your face against it, towards it, right? And lay siege on it yourself. Take this pan and use it to lay siege on them. This is a sign to the house of Israel that Jerusalem is about to be besieged. You see, when the Babylonians carried off their first wave of exiles in 597, they didn't besiege the city, they didn't conquer the city, they didn't touch the city. But days will come where they will do just that. The Ata. Okay, now this is the third symbol. Okay? We just did the second one, which is a small little diagram of Jerusalem as the brick. And the siege is laid upon it. Okay. Now the Gemara in Brachos talks about a kir barzel, about a, when you daven, you should daven near a wall. You should put your hand on the wall. You should daven near a vant, mizrach vant. You've heard of that, right? And it says because when Chizkiyahu prayed in Sefer Melachim, it says vayisov el hakir. He purposely went up to the wall, put his hand there, and prayed like the kotel, so to say, right? Here it says this is to undo that. This is a kir barzel, a wall of iron that was cast between God and His people. That makes it so that they can't be reached. In Eicha it says, so Sam's filasi, my sakosa ba'aba anan, you know, you covered us with the cloud. We can't reach you. We're stuck behind the wall, behind the cloud. Martinus says that when you enact a tinus, it should not be on a cloudy day. It should be on a sunny day. Don't make a tinus on a cloudy day. Most of the tanesim were because there's no rain, so if it's a cloudy day, maybe you don't need a tinus, right? Anyway, so he's talking here about the wall that has come up between us. Okay. Now he tells them, now lie on your left side. On your side. Let the sin of Israel be upon you. That you should suffer for their sins. The amount of days that you lie on your side, that's how long it'll take you to atone for their sin. Hashem is about to tell him how many days. Alright, get ready. These are the amount of days I want you to stay on your left side without moving. 390 days. In the Sasavon Beis Yisrael. 390 days. So, what was this 390 days for 390 years? Right? So, Rashi, take a look at Rashi on Pasuk Hey. Shaninu b'Seder Ha'olam, in the Mishnaic work, Tanaic work called Seder Olam, which gives a history of the Tanakh. Malamei shechatu Yisrael shlosh me'od v'tishim shana, mishenichnus l'aretz. The time they came into the land, right? From the time they came into the land until the Beis Hamikdash was built was 440 years. Right? Because the Yetzias Mitzrayim was 480 years. From the time that they built the Beis Hamikdash to the time it was destroyed was 420 years. 410 years. Right? So it's 850 years altogether. Right? And 390 of those were terrible sins. V'atamot Tzeluhem Meforshim Masayim barbeim shalosh mishmalachi rava matshagolah sheben ela ubimei shvot hashoftim kuf yudal of shanim v'ashar stumim. 243 years from the time of Yerava until the 10 tribes were destroyed. 111 years in Sefer Shoftim, and the rest you have to figure out in other places. All right, to get up to 390. Tzasi b'tshuvas Rav Yosef Reish Mesifta. Look at this long Rashi, he figures out the years. Right? And everything. He finds the cheshbon to get 390 years of sinning. And Yechezkel has to atone one day on his side for each one of those years. Because he would have very serious bed sores from that. Right? But that's the same question I dealt with before. Did he actually do this, or did he... Right? What would it serve that the prophet remains inactive for so long without going out there to get the people to improve, to atone for this? One thing we see is that the idea of one person atoning for the sins of many is taka Jewish idea. It's not the first time we see this. Okay, the Christians, you know, early Christians were Jews, and they co-opted the idea. Miriam dies, the Paraduma is mentioned right afterwards to teach that just as the Paraduma atoned, so too the death of righteous people atoned for their generation. Same about Nadav and Avihu, juxtaposed right to the Azazel. just as the Azazel atone, so too the death of righteous atone. These are the thoughts like this truly in our sources. So Yechezkel is atoning through this one act, 390 years. Now look what else Hashem tells him to do. Then, after you finish 390 days on your left side, now turn over on your right side. I'm wondering what Yechezkel thought at this point. For Yehuda, you have to atone for 40 years. They were not sinful. Whew, I thought I'd have to do another hundreds of years, right? So you just got away with another 40 years. Avon Beis Yehuda, Pasuk Vav, Rashi says, Melamed Shechatu Beis Yehuda, Mishagolo Atzeres HaShvatim, Ad Shechorva Yushalayim Arboim Shana. 40 years from the time of the fall of the 10 tribes, they sinned. 22 years of Menashe, because he did Tshuva for 33 years. Rashi quotes the Drash from the end of Sanhedrin. And Rashi figures out how you get to all the 40 years of Yehuda. Right? Okay, so there's 22 years of Menashe, 2 years of Amon, that's 24, 11 years of Yehoiakim, that's 35. Right? Some years in the middle of Yehoachaz, Yehoiachin, just a couple of months here and there. But he works his way up to 40. Okay? So he has to do 390 years for Yisrael, and 40 years for Yehuda. Ve'el Metzor Yerushalayim Tochin Panecha, Uzroacha Chasufa V'Niveis Alecha. And turn your attention to the siege of Yerushalayim. Okay? Okay, Uzroacha Chasufa. Chasufa, Chasaf means to uncover. To uncover. So next week's Haftarah, the word appears. It's not an uncommon word. Okay? So he says, uncover your arm and yibeis aleha, and then give prophecy. What does it mean to uncover your arm and give prophecy? The arm is a symbol of strength. Uncover it, reveal it. Don't hide these words. Reveal your strength. Stand up to them if you need to. Okay. Rashi says it's a sign of the uncovered strength of Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar is going to punish you. Okay? Right, now Yechezkel himself is going to attempt to reveal what these symbols are. I'm putting the ropes back on you. Right. And do not turn from one side to the other. You have phenomenal bed sores on 390 days on one side, you can't even turn over. Right? So again, you have the machlokas. It's hard to fathom that the prophet can do this. 90 days without ever moving. To show it in activity, you will be in. They're impervious to your objections and your struggles against them, and there's nothing you can do about it. Okay. V'ato kach l'cha chitin u'saorim u'fo v'adoshim. I want you to take wheat and barley, what type of legumes, types of beans and lentils. Dochan aksumin, dochan is millet, kusmim is spelt. Put all those things into one vessel. Make them into a cake. Now I'm not even writing this as one, I didn't list this as one of the symbols, but Eat this for 390 days. You have Ezekiel's bread? Yeah, there you go.
410.
What?
Uh-huh. You ever hear of Ezekiel bread?
Yeah. We call it a Trader Joe's.
Look at the cover of the bread, and it says Ezekiel 410. It's our pasuk. Right.
Cereal too.
So let's see, this is what they put into Ezekiel bread. Wheat, barley. It's called polamitzri, it's like an Egyptian bean. Beans and lentils and millet and spelt. So put any rye in there. Groats. Right, so three of these are grains, and two are legumes, and dochan is sort of like a rice. I'm not sure what they call that. Some call it a legume, some call it a, I believe a, rice is not a legume. Right. Some call it bread, some call it a grain. And I'm talking about in the Mishnah. Mishnah Chal, Mishnah Pesachim, over whether it's chametz or whether it's. No, when someone in the Gemara holds that it's mamash a bread product, it's not Ashkenazi Sephardi. Yochanan ben Nuri holds that it's mamash a bread product. Okay, so he says, eat this bread for your 390 days. Right? It'd probably be good, you know, just the amount of fiber he needs to take care of business there, you know. And you may only eat 20 shkalim of this each and every day. You, it's not a lot. You know what a shekel is? You see a shekel? It's a weight. I have carried a biblical ancient shekel. It is it's round. It's not flat. The coin, it's actually spherical, and it's a sphere about this big, not much bigger than this, okay. Just about this. That's probably big, not big, and it's about, I would say the size of a marble.
Okay,
20 marbles.
20 marbles.
It's not a lot.
It says here a shekel. This is in English. Struck by a Maccabean king. Weighs 219 grains. And they figured out that Yecheskel's food for the whole day was just over 9 ounces.
Right.
I don't know how they figured that out.
No, that's about right. From what we see, a shekel, the shekel coins, the shekel weights, I'd say 20 marbles weighs about 9, you know, I don't know, marbles may be heavier, but 20, right. You know, 20 marbles.
Approximately. Yes.
Weight.
But how
marbles? It's really not. No, because we know we have some idea of what an ancient shekel would be. All right, so umayim b'mesura tishteh. Does that sound familiar?
Yeah.
It's a Mishnah Pirkei Avos. Pas b'melach tochal umayim b'mesura tishteh. Measure out your water. Mesura means a measurement. Shishis hahin me'es ad es tishteh. A sixth of a hin.
Less than a
quarter. Okay. A hin, there are different, a lot of different opinions in the Mishnah and Ediot about how much water goes into a hin. But a hin is a little more than a gallon. The measurements kept changing over time. Okay. So yeah, so a sixth of something a little more than a gallon could be less than a quart. V'ugas sa'orim tochlena, v'hi begela leitzea sa'odam t'ugena le'ineyem. Huh? What? You will eat it like barley cakes, and you shall bake it with human excrement? Their sight, what is he talking about? Begela leitzea sa'odam t'ugena. What is Hashem telling our prophet to do? Arichas minuvelas ki arichas sa'orim, v'lo noa ki arichas ugas chitim. Oh, okay, at least Rashi is telling us. He didn't actually put that in the bread. He used it as fuel. Right? It is actually used as fuel in some places. Burn it. It's not going to make the bread smell too good. Right? But use excrement as fuel, Rashi says.
The Arabs still use it. Yeah. They dry it up and they use it as fuel.
Yeah.
The Arabs.
Mm-hmm. Could that be a solution to the energy crisis?
What?
They have enough oil.
Completely dry.
Okay, so Vayomer Hashem, Kocha yochlu bnei Israel laslachmam tameh bagoyim asher adichem shom. So will the Jews have to struggle to get their bread together where I will exile them. Okay, so this one about making this bread. I'm not calling this a symbol. This is still part of the symbol of lying on his side. Okay, All this is about the symbol on the side. V'omar, and I said to God, Aha Adonai Elohim, woe unto me, God. Hinei nafshi lo metuma'ah. Why are you making me do this? I'm not tamei. Why are you making me symbolize the tumah of Bnei Yisrael? Unevelu treifa lo achalti minu rai v'adato. V'lo bo b'fi b'sar pigul. I never ate treifa in the Vela. Why are you making a pure person symbolize these impurities? I never ate pigul. What's pigul?
Something to do with the
korban. If a korban is brought without the proper intention, it's pigul. I never ate pigul. Maybe he's a kohen. Right? It's very, very, very difficult to determine that you never ate pigul. How do you know what someone's intention was? He says, I was very careful. Whenever I ate kachim, I always went to the kohen and I said, you sure you had the right kavona? Tell me the kavona you had. He was never ate pigul. The fact, though, is that the Gemara in the Seches Chulin, makes drashas about all these things. You know what it calls basa nevela, basa mesukena, shedomen nevela trefa. I never ate basa nevela, meaning an animal that was sickly. I never ate basa pigul. This is a very early reference to what we call glad kosher. Behema shehora b'chacham. He's not talking about real nevela and trefa. What's the big deal about that? No Jew is supposed to eat nevela and trefa. Right? What he means, I never ate meat that wasn't glat. What is Rashi saying? So when does meat become glat? What do you call non-glat? What stage? What causes meat to become non-glat?
Some kind of a moment that it declared its kosher anyway.
Right. There was some kind of mum in it. They looked at the lungs. They saw it wasn't smooth. There was some kind of sirchas on it. There was some kind of lesions. And they checked it out. They looked at it. They moved it around. They said, oh, it's not a lesion. It's a pimple. It's not bleeding underneath. The animal wasn't sick. So, but they had a shiloh. Once you have a shiloh, it's not glad anymore. So that's what he says pigul is. It's a shiloh. And once there's a shiloh, I didn't eat it. So the first person to publicly declare that he doesn't eat non-glad meat was Yecheskel. Right to the Gemara. Hashem sort of rebukes him, puts him back, and he says, right? He said to me, I have given you, thanks God, I've given you the dung of cows instead of the dung of man to make your fuel. Make your bread on top of that. Thanks for small things. In they shover mate lechem b'Yerushalayim, v'achlu lechem b'mishkol v'daga u'b'mayim v'mishkor u'b'shimamon kishdu. The way you will be eating for these 390 days, one day for every year of sinning, is the way that they're going to be eating soon in Yerushalayim. Every bit of bread, it's like Sukkim and Eicha. Right? Every bit of bread you get, every water that you, drop of water that you get, is going to be with great aga, meaning great worry. You have to threaten your life just to get food. You risk your life. Right? Water will have to be measured out with great, great wonderment. Will you have to make a plan just to get a little water and risk your life in doing so. Okay? The psukim like this in Eicha. L'man yechasru lechem b'mayim v'nashimu ish v'achiv namako b'avonam. It's a pasuk like this in Yirmiyahu too. Right? All this to waste away because of their iniquity. Right? Okay, so this is the... this is the message behind Yechezkel's third vision of making the cake with this in this very unusual way. Right? Now we turn to the fourth of the four symbols. Turn our attention to that in Perikhei. The fourth vision is maybe even more bizarre than the others. V'ata ben adam, kach lecho cherev chada, ta'ar hal galovim tikochen aloch. Take a sharp sword, sharpen a razor. Take a razor. V'havarta al roshcha v'al zekonecha. Start cutting everything off. From your head and your beard and your face. I'm going to take a sharp knife, a barber's razor, pass it over your head and over your beard. Okay? And make two sides of a scale. Scale usually has two hands, right?
You mean a palm scale?
Two palms. Kafmon's nine, they call it. And put the hair that you shave from your head on both sides and divide it. Shlishis ba'ur tavir besoch ha'ir, kimlos yemei ha'matzor, v'lakachtos ha'shlishis takev ha'cherev, svivosev ha'shlishis tizre l'ruach, v'cherev ha'rik ha'chereihem. So, divide your hair into three parts. One part on one side of the scale, one part on another side of the scale. And the third part taken to the city. Right? When the days symbolizing the siege are fulfilled. And take the third part and make like you're stabbing it with a sword. Right? Takeva cheriv. And another third, tizere l'ruach, throw up to the wind. V'cherev arik achareihem. And I'll draw a sword after that hair that you throw to the wind. What do you think this symbolizes? A third will die in Yerushalayim. Exactly. Even those who flee Yerushalayim will not be so safe. They'll run after you. Okay? Now, the reason for this is because the Jews put up a fight. Chezkel is going to make a claim like Yirmiyahu did, which was, don't fight the Babylonians. Just remember, we did that last year many times. Just let them come in. Don't put up a fight, because if you put up a fight, it's going to make it worse. Now, when your land is being threatened, you don't like to just sit back and do nothing. But that's exactly what the prophets told them to do.
Is that like an issue of pride, in a sense? You feel yourself haughty enough that you must hide your pride in what you have, but God really wants them to be humbled completely.
Right, and just part of what drove them to this state in the first place was their pride. So now they're being put in their place. Okay. And take a small number, some say the small number of the hair that's left, and bind them in the corners of your garment, whatever you know, the men were wearing like these long gowns. So kind of thing. Okay. Mehem od tikach mishlachto osam el tocha ish, sarafto osam, ba ish mimenu tetzei ish el kol b'nei Beis Yisrael. Whatever hair remains, throw it in the fire. So Rashi cites the Gemara in Sanhedrin that talks about this symbolizing some leaders of the Jews that the Babylonians burnt in the fire. It's actually written, it's not in Agadah, so that's written in Sefer Melachim. Some Jewish leaders that the Babylonians burnt. Komar Hashem Elokim, Zos Yerushalayim B'soch HaGoyim Samtiyah V'Svivoseh HaRatzos. Hashem says, this is what I'm going to do to Yerushalayim in the midst of the nations. And the countries that are around her are going to suffer a similar fate. That's what Yirmiyahu does at the end of his book. Remember, he talked about all the other nations, what's going to happen to them. By that time, he started to wax very eloquent. Vatemer es mishpotai. Vatemer, very common Yechezkelism. Vatemer, like base Mary. Vatemer, like Mered. And you went against me. Turned away from it. It's a very unusual terminology, but you know this already about Yechezkel. He makes up about 100 words in this book. Isn't this Vatemer? Vatomir, maybe?
Like some Himruat P. Same shortage that can have Himruat P.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's not a made up word,
huh? Really, it's not a made up word, it's made up form. Huh? No, he doesn't make up words, he makes up forms of words. Mm-hmm. Temerz mishpatah l'bishah. They turned my mishpat into wickedness. Minagoyim asher minagoyim. Veshukosai min aratzaus asher svivoseha. Ki b'mishpatay ma'asu v'chukosai lo v'chu b'hem. I have to do this because you have rebelled against my mishpatim. You followed the ways of the Goyim. You did not in any way, shape, or form fulfill the mission I had in mind for you. V'chein ko amar Hashem Elokim. Ya'an hamonchem min hagoyim. This is another Yecheskelism. Have you heard that word before? Hamonchem? It's hamonchem. Right? Okay. Like hamon. You know, hamonchem lashon v'yaman lahem hamelech. Right? Huma, kimo mehuma. Hamu, alkein hamu may I lo. Right? Something of a turbulence. So he says that you didn't want to follow my laws, you didn't want to follow my chukim, you didn't want to follow my mishpatim. Then it says, shouldn't it say asisem? You agree? What's the lo doing there? Right? Do you see the word lo in Pasuk Zion does not seem to belong?
Is it even worse?
Right?
I'm taking some of those sweaters you brought. I'm going to sweat now. Excess. Alright?
Okay. So, you see what he's saying? He's saying, and you refuse to walk in my statutes. And what did you do? You didn't walk into the statutes of the Goyim. Doesn't he mean to say... You did walk in the statutes of the Goyim? Isn't that what he means to say?
Didn't
want to malign them. So Rashi says, no. You're even worse.
You didn't do anything.
Right. He says, he mentions that you're even worse than that.
Well, also in Pasuk Vav, it says, Min HaGoyim.
Right. So he says, Heim lo hemiru es Eloheyem, Heim lo Elohim, Vatem imartim kvodi belo yo'il. Rashi quotes a Pasuk in Yirmiyahu Perek Beis. There it says Kvodo, right? But Sena Pirshu Kimitukanim Shabaham, Lo Asisim Kimukolam Shabam Asisim. You didn't even do like the good their good ones. You're even worse than their bad ones. Lochain Komar Shemalokim, Hindini Alayach Kamani, Vosisi Bisochech Mishpatim Leneagoyim. Therefore, I'm going to do the same to you. I'm going to do to you, right in your midst, my Mishpatim, that the Goyim will all see what I'm going to do. This is Derech Katzar. I'm going to do to you what I haven't done to anyone else. You'll suffer more than anyone else before you because of all your abominations. How did we suffer more than any other nation? So Malachi discusses this last week's Haftarah. Malachi says, You seem to suffer more than the other nations because Hashem keeps you around for another day. Right? They get one big shot and that's it, they're finished. They're done with. One quick, get it over with, please. Finish. But we keep coming back for more. That's in the next piece of Torah. Esav Sonesi. When I destroy Esav, he's gone forever. When I destroy you, I give you the strength to come back. Right? Fathers will eat their children, children will eat their fathers. I'm going to do terrible judgments in your midst. Whoever's left amongst you will be cast to the wind like the hair that I just threw up. Im lo yan es mikto shiti meis bechol shi kutzayach v'chol tov v'sayach v'gam ani egral lo techos eni v'gam ani lo echna. All the abominations that you have performed and acted out in my house, I cannot pity you for that. I cannot forgive you for that. Okay. Shlishi seich v'dever yemusu v'rav yechlu b'socheich v'ashlishi s'bacherv yiplus v'vosayach. Right? And just as you had the three thirds, just as he had the 3/3 of his hair, he's talking about 3/3 of the Israelites. And Zichari also refers to 3/3. Remember the Pishnahim, the 2/3 this way, the one, right? Okay. So he says, of the 3/3, 1/3 will die of Dever and Ra'av. Remember we learned that Beder is the one who goes and who dies from the sword and from the famine. Shlishis b'cherev yiplu. A third will fall with the sword. Shlishis l'choruach ezarev b'cherev arik achareihem. And a third will escape, and they will be chased. Right? Some attribute this to the Holocaust. There were 9 million Jews in Europe, and 6 million were killed. So 2/3 went to the sword or the famine, and 1/3 was chased around, and they chased after them too. וכל האפי ואני חוסי חמסי בום ונחמתי וידעו כי אני השם דיברתי בכנסי בחוסי בחמסי בום. But in the end you're still my children, so I will have pity on you. My anger will be diminished, and I will take pity on you once again. Okay. ואת נח לחורבה לחרפה בגויים אשר סביבו סייך לעיני כל עובר. You will be a shame, a shander. Everyone will say tisk tisk when they consider you and what you've become. For I saw cherpo gedufa musar mishama lagoyim. You'll be a cherpo, you'll be a shanda, you'll be a chirif, an object of derision, gedufa of cursedness, a musar and a mishama lagoyim, a shesu asayach. Vasasibach shvatim ba'af b'chema v'tochachos chema ani Hashem b'arti. When I take my anger out on you and I get even with you for all that you've done all these years, that's what they're going to do. This is, we have pretty much, this country was very much responsible for ridding the world of such evil systems as fascism and communism. Right? We've mostly defeated communism in the world, but any small stronghold of communism is such a pariah, rogue nation. And we've turned it that way, right? But However, those two, fascism and communism, were so rapidly anti-Semitic, both of them, that we think with the eradication of those two that we could now, relax and be a little normal about the Jewish experience. But no, the Semitism is becoming very powerful. Right? My sfara is that its power rides in the fact that there are so many Jews who are proud to be ashamed of being Jewish. Proud to be ashamed of being Jewish. So that's what contributes to it, especially in Israel. We think ourselves. There's a rabbi here on the west side who was giving a multi-lecture series. Is Zionism dead? And his answer is yes, it is. He's the rabbi of the Reconstructionist show. I see his flyers all over the place. I see the speakers he has. They're so rabid in their anti-Semitism, and they hide it in anti-Zionism, right? Okay, so are we a pariah? I think the world looks with envy upon us. That's a lot of the anti-Semitism. The world looks with envy upon us. Such a tiny little sliver of a nation surrounded by those who want to destroy her from the first day she ever existed. Right? I mean, the mistake of what Israel has experienced is that the nations that fought against Israel after the UN declared the partition plan should have been ejected from the UN. And the UN makes a proclamation. This is the partition of Israel and Palestine. Right? Six nations went to fight Israel. Those six nations should have been. How do you continue to have them? They just bore arms against the UN proclamation. They should have been booted from the UN.
Security Council.
So if that had been done, then it'd be a much more just world today. and the descendants of all these miserable Palestinians wouldn't continue to be living in their misery. It would have long ago been resettled, like so many Jews in these Arab countries have been settled in this tiny little land. That the UN created its own global chaos. How, with all that, after World War II, with all of the amazing, phenomenal wealth, the 50s was a time of great expansion. How we haven't expanded to resolve some of the problems of the world because the governments themselves, once they're left to their own devices, their own people will evict them when they see how corrupt they are. The only thing they can live on is to protect my people from the enemy. Venezuela has to protect these people from the United States and those who will subvert it. This man has taken a wealthy nation and has just pretty much destroyed it. It's happening all over. And one thing that's common to all these kinds of countries, they all have rabid anti-Semitism.
The amazing thing is that they actually voted in Israel into existence.
Yeah.
This has been shown. No, I really wouldn't say it that way. Israel declared its own independence.
Okay, but
the UN recognized it with their partition.
That's already something. They should.
No, I'm
afraid they wouldn't.
No, we say that we're not supposed to start an independent political entity in Israel against the will of the Goyim. That's one of the oaths in the Talmud and Ksuvos. So we didn't. A world body of Goyim recognized us. So let's finish the parak. B'shalchi eschitzei ha-ra'av ha-ra'im ma'am asher ha-yu l'mashchitz asher ha-shalach osam l'shech eschem for avo seif alechem v'shavarti lechem matei lechem. It's going to be very hard to find bread at the time. You know, we're learning since Sefer we went to Yoshua, Shoftim, Shmuel. I think you've been here all the time, Sheila, right? Shmuel, Lachim. You know, the Bible is not an easy book to learn. There's a lot of harsh stuff in here. Alright, but here it is. V'shilachti aleichem ra'av v'chaya ra'av v'shiklucha v'shikluch v'dever v'dam yavor bach v'cherav avi alayach ani Hashem dibarti. I have spoken, says God. And this shaving that you just took, Yechezkel, your face, I'm going to take a razor to the whole nation. Okay, so let's review. We did the four symbols: the avosim, the ropes; the levena, the brick; the lying on two sides; and the tar. You have it all in on your.
Yeah, on the page.
Yeah. Okay, so that brings us in next week into chapter 6. One thing is emerging from Chezkel, similar to Yirmiyahu, I should say.